Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Jamie Hutchinson from The Sampler. How are you, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. You're an Irishman, aren't you?
I am, unfortunately. No, I grew up in Ireland, but I came over to England for university and have stayed here ever since. That was probably 15, 16 years ago.
Excellent. The Sampler's, it's quite a highly awarded wine merchant in London now. Yep. How long have you been going for?
Only 3 years. So we started at the end of 2006. Things have been going really well. So we won lots and lots of awards last year and may that continue.
Yeah, that's very good. Very good. I saw you guys winning a few awards and I was thinking, gosh, that's incredible. Why are you so good?
Modesty. I think what we do is different from most people. So, you know, when I looked at going into the wine business to begin with, because I was just really an enthusiastic amateur rather than a seasoned pro in the business. But I just thought it was kind of strange how people sell wines based on their appearance or based on their price point or based on their reputation, based on what someone else had to say. When actually, in many cases, certainly to my palate, there was a whole load of wines that I enjoyed, maybe. In spite of their labeling or in spite of their price. And so what we were trying to do was to give people the chance to try the wines before making a decision as to what to buy. And that way they'll find wines that are more suited to their palate and probably actually are a bit more interesting as well, because otherwise people tend to go for the safe bet or go for the very, very cheapest option, which is often exactly the very worst wine that you could buy.
Okay. A lot of people do on-site sampling, though. Yeah, it's not. I've been to Majestic stores, and they'll always stick a glass in your hand if you ask them.
Yep.
Or even if you don't.
but if you think about the way that they do it, it's we use the enomatic system in order to keep the wines fresh to begin with, but also to give a measured sample which we can charge for. We use a smart card system that actually charges for each small tasting sample.
So you're actually charging for your samples?
Yeah. It's not at a kind of an on-trade markup. It's basically the retail price of the bottle divided by the number of samples plus a little bit for wastage, an extra kind of 10% or something for wastage. Mm-hmm. So the idea really is simply to get people trying as many wines as they can, so that they can educate their decision as to what they buy. It's not the same thing if you have to open the whole bottle and get through it in a day, and which would drive you towards having as inexpensive a wine and relatively few choices, mm-hmm. As possible. What we try and do is actually rotate through all of our all of the wines that we stock, so that people get a fair view as to as to what range is available, and they can choose themselves which ones they enjoy rather than me deciding.
I had a look at your range, and you've got wines from, it didn't seem too expensive, 5-6 quid, right through to, I saw a 2000 Latour for £850.
Yeah.
Quite pricey.
We sell wines right across the spectrum. We actually go beyond that for some of the old wines. And we have a quite a broad selection of aged wines. But again, that's because of using the sampling kind of way of selling, we can actually sell wines that customers would be a bit uncomfortable about buying if they couldn't try them first. If you're going to try a wine from the 60s, which doesn't have a huge number of professional tasting notes on it, how do you know whether it's going to be any good or not? Mm. And actually, a lot of these wines are relatively inexpensive because of that, because other retailers find them hard to sell.
Saw some very odd Rioja that you were
tasting. We have, on sampling at the minute, we have a 1952 Rioja Gran Reserva from Barberana, which is a great example of that. It's a wonderful wine. And 52 is a very good vintage, but not all that well known. And so the wine's expensive, but it's not... it's not the price of a fresh growth Bordeaux. It's not as expensive as that Latour 2000. And I think certainly if you're going to drink it today, it will give you a lot more pleasure and is a fifth or a tenth of the price.
So you use this. What did you describe the system as? Enomatic.
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 Yeah. So that's the Italian manufacturer of the tasting machines, and they were. I think it was originally set up in order for the Chianti Classico Consortia to show their Chiantis to tourists when they visited Tuscany.
I've seen it in Montepulciano.
You see it in quite a number of different places. It's been quite successful in Tuscany, usually in that kind of Enoteca kind of style bistros or places like that. And the vast majority of people who've bought the machines use them for within restaurants or wine bars because it enables them to have a much wider choice of wine by their glass. Mm. What's slightly more unusual is to use it in a straightforward retail environment in order to educate to inform the purchase, I suppose. But I think the UK is really well suited to being able to kind of offer that as a service because we get great access to wines from all over the world, whereas in Italy, as in many wine producing countries, you tend to have a real focus on the wines from the local area. And you know, from my point of view, I find myself a little bit bored after tasting, 15 Chiantis. Wanted to try something else. And it's one of the great advantages of the UK or the US or places like that, which aren't quite so steeped in their own local culture.
It can be quite good. We used it to rattle through quite a range of Montalcinos when we were over in Tuscany. That was quite nice just to see the different styles.
It's brilliant.
It's not that easy, though, to use the system here because there's some really weird legislation. We remember covering it a wee while ago that the UK's got some quite specific sampling measures.
It's a European law, which is interesting because it should catch everyone in the European Union, but it seems that only the UK are as backward or take the letter of the law to quite the extent that some of the councils have done in terms of thinking about what the required sample sizes are, or the required glass sizes. The real issue is for selling wine by the glass, there are fixed sizes of glass, so the 125 or 175. In order for... We sell much smaller samples than that. And we wouldn't want to force people to have an entire glass of the wine.
Yeah, just to get a sample.
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
What size do you use?
It's a couple of mouthfuls for exactly the same reason, for the silly legal reason. I can't actually legally tell you how big they are because then it would need to be one of those size samples. Or I would need to be able to absolutely prove that it is for each individual sample. It is the same size each time. It's a couple of mouthfuls, enough to try the wine.
Is that how you get around it, by not telling people how much they're buying?
There are a whole range of hoops that we've had to jump through in order to get what we're doing classed as a tasting event. So that's an exclusion to the Weights and Measures Act. That is one of them, is not to provide a measured sample. If it's a measured sample, it then is within the Weights and Measures Act. And so we cannot legally commit to giving you a measured sample without breaching the laws, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, sure.
But, I suppose the intention behind the law was in order to stop pubs or, sharp practice, I suppose, of people shortchanging a glass.
Yeah.
Obviously, within this kind of usage, it's just totally irrelevant whether you get, 22 or 28 milliliters. The issue is whether or not it informs your purchase, and whether you feel, if you feel it's too expensive, then you wouldn't come back, or you'd get your money back, and that would be absolutely fine. So it's just been the implementation, I suppose, of those fundamental principles, which has been a little bit more tricky.
So you're in the right side of the law in terms of,
of course,
sampling?
Yeah. And we had to spend quite a lot of time before we opened in order to get permission to open in the manner that we have done.
Okay. But suffragists who have a similar system, they only sell by the glass, don't they? They wanted to do sampling, but they couldn't.
Yes, but if you think of the way that suffragists... The Wonder Bar in Selfridges works. It really is a bar, and you can buy wine by the glass. Whereas you cannot have a glass of wine at the sampler.
Okay.
The whole purpose of what we're doing is like a tasting event, which is to inform the purchase of the bottle of wine. Whereas in a bar environment, it's actually the on-trade consumption of alcohol, and therefore although the differences may be somewhat subtle when you initially think about it. It is quite different in terms of some of the usages. And so that's why suffragists have found it somewhat more difficult than we have. And in fairness, also because I think the Westminster training standards people have been a little bit more retentive, let's say, in terms of their interpretations of the law than we've had here in Islington, who've been very supportive.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. I understand you were saying earlier that the legislation is about to change or possibly change, subject to elections and...
Yeah, so Selfridges and ourselves and the Wine and Spirit Trade Association lobbied government over the last 3 years, really, in order to get them to consider changing the way that the Weights and Measures Act is co- constituted in order to make sure that this the kind of thing that we are doing and the kind of thing that they're doing in small samples is more straightforward on a legal basis. Because the issue for us is how quickly we can expand. We need to get specific permission for each shop that we open. And so we lobbied for quite a long time, and finally the government announced probably 3 months ago, 4 months ago, that they had agreed to the principle of, in effect, deregulating wine when it's being consumed in less than 75 milliliter glasses. So there are no specified quantities below 75 mils, and the retailer would be free to choose whatever size. And that's great for flights and restaurants, so mm-hmm. you can have small glasses or flights, and it obviously makes it very straightforward for us, and it would mean that Selfridges, quite rightly, should be able to go to, you know, to small samples as well within their bar.
Okay. So it seems like your USP is Enomatic, and it sounds like you're also going to be expanding. So has it been quite successful here?
It's been absolutely brilliant, yeah. So we've been selling a lot of wine. We've been winning a lot of prizes, which has meant that we've got more and more customers. And yeah, we raised some money last year in order to expand. And so we'll be opening, I hope, at least two shops this year in different areas, still within London. But you know, then beyond that, who knows? You know, we may open a few more. It'll never be enormous. I don't think we're looking to do 200 stores and try and copy Albans or something like that. You know, but I see no reason why it couldn't be more applicable on a broader scale than what we have here.
What sort of number are you thinking? 20, 30?
We honestly don't know. So it just depends. There are some diseconomies of scale as you get to be a bigger retailer. So, you know, we focus on wines from the vast majority of wines that we sell are from small growers, which are often quite hard to get. Mm-hmm. You know, even for us to get, never mind for the customer to get. And as you get bigger, you actually, there's a risk that you find that your range suffers if you get too big.
Yeah.
But where that crossing point is, I don't know. You know, I mean, many of the other chains find that at around the sort of 50, 60 store mark that they began to find some diseconomies of scale rather than economies of scale. But that's a long way in the future. I mean, so we just don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. I think one thing which is interesting is I think although the sampling is something that differentiates us on an obvious basis, for us, we think that the reason why we're actually being successful is more on the range that we've got rather than the ability to taste by itself. Because if you actually see on a global basis the number of people who've installed tasting machines or stuff like this, their businesses have not actually been all that successful, because what they've tended to do is they haven't had the passion or the interest or the access to the wines that have backed that up. And so it's become actually a little bit of a sort of a fly-by-night, or, you know, it's been a short-term attractive proposition for the customer. Where we think that the only way that we can do well with allowing customers to taste the wine first is if the wines are fundamentally better than you can get elsewhere. And so we spend nearly all of our time actually buying the wines and finding interesting producers and stuff like that. I think that's actually led to more of our success than just the machines by itself.
Yeah, okay. So it's a mixture of the classic good wines, good customer service,
yeah.
And you've got an interesting USP that does bring the odd punter in.
Well, yeah, but it's not just bringing the old punter in. You know, it's actually regular customers. You know, the vast majority of our sales are to people who come in every week or every few weeks.
You are in quite a ritzy end of London, really, isn't it? Well, it's gentrified and
yeah, it is. I mean, Islington's it's an interesting place. It's it's pretty rich. So the sort of demographics are pretty good, but it's not as high end demographically as many other areas in London. Mm. It's certainly wealthier than most. And I think one good thing about most of the people in Islington is they tend to be quite adventurous or maybe a little bit
quirky as well.
Quirky.
When you walk down the high street, everybody looks quirky.
Yeah. But that's good, you know, and I think for certainly for wines, you know, it means that people can be a bit more adventurous. You know, the wines that we try and sell have character first and foremost. And that's, you know, people need to be somewhat open-minded to, you know, to be able to buy wines with a character. Otherwise, they'll just buy, you know, claret and big, you know, Grand Marc champagne all the time.
How do you find the competition? You've got a couple of odd bins on either side of you within three or four blocks anyway.
Yeah. Used to have three.
Used to have three odd bins or three?
Three odd bins on Upper Street when we opened.
Oh, really?
There's now only two. And there was also two threshers within a threshers and a wine rack within a stone's throw. Both of those have now gone.
So you've gone from what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 competitors down to 2?
Yeah, although one of the odd bins became a Nicola, so I suppose it's just swapping its brand. So it was before Nicola sold the odd bins brand, they actually rebranded one of the shops down as a Nicola, down towards Angel. It's funny though, it probably is competition to a certain extent with us. I don't know. We don't. Since the Thresher stores have closed, we haven't seen any marked change in the way that people have bought wine from us. I think we kind of appeal to a slightly different market.
Yeah. So maybe odd bins have picked up a bit of Threshers because they.
Yes, I suspect they have.
They've got a similar sort of proposition, whereas your wines are, I wouldn't say necessarily expensive, but you're certainly aiming at more the fine wine end of the market.
Well, I mean, we go down to £6. But we don't sell big brands, so the idea is not to sell
Blossom Hill.
Life's too short to sell Blossom Hill. So, I'd want to sell wines with fundamental quality, or even a wine like Veuve Clicquot. Why would an independent merchant stock Veuve Clicquot? Yeah, you can buy it in a corner store. So if people want to buy Veuve Clicquot, go ahead. I'm sure the corner store can sell it more cheaply than I can.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it shows their lack of taste. But there they go.
Okay, so you're not a big fan of stocking likes of Veuve Clicquot, but what sort of champagnes do you stock?
So we don't have any fundamental built-in advantage for champagne because you can't try currently, unfortunately, any of the champagnes on the machines. So the first area that we looked at in terms of direct importing straight from France was grower champagnes.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have probably the largest, or almost definitely the largest selection of grower champagnes in the UK.
When you say grower champagnes, you mean instead of the big houses, independent producers?
Yeah, so independent producers who own their own vineyards and make their own wine. So they don't sell to the Grand Marnier. And therefore they don't have to support, I suppose, the marketing budget that the Grand Marks have in order to produce that very nice branding. And what you get with the growers is you tend to have better pricing, and you have more characterful, not necessarily better wines, but more characterful and more specific wines, and wines which are probably truer to their terroir, I suppose. And so if you know what you're looking for, or if you're willing to experiment a little bit, you can get wines with much more interest and much better suited to your palate by looking at a grower champagne than you can by the Grand Marks. Now, some of the Grand Marks, particularly at the top end, make very good champagnes. But I think you get more personality for your pound within grower champagne. So we have more than 60 on the shelves, right?
That's quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you found champagne to be popular during the recession, or is it completely dried up?
It still makes up probably 18%, 20% of our sales, and nearly all of that is grower champagne. So, it hasn't changed that much.
Excellent. And your staff, I met a few of your staff on the way in. You seem to have, what, 3 people here at the moment?
Yes.
Is that
normal? Another 3 at different tastings across London. We're currently at 8 staff, but we're training up for the next stores. We'll probably be, 12 over the next 3 or 4 months. And they all come from different varied backgrounds. So Sebastian, who joined us, first of all, used to run a number of shops for Nicola in London. But we've got people from importing backgrounds, from agency businesses, from Odd Bins, from Majestic, from really broad collection of people from different retail and different wine related backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And everyone has or is studying for their diploma at the WSET.
I suppose because you've got, you said earlier that you cycle through a lot of wines through the tasting machines. Does that mean that your staff get to taste a lot of the wines as
well?
It's
part of the reason why, I think working for us should be, rewarding for people, particularly in the early stages of their career, because they get to taste, a huge number of wines and right up the quality level. And it's kind of some of the wines that we put onto our Icon tasting machine, we have seasoned professionals who come in to taste those wines because they can't generally afford to open a bottle of, Petrus 78 or Lafite 82. And giving everyone in the shop the ability to taste those wines and gain, build some experience is great because it helps them. It makes it's an interesting thing to do in the first place, and it helps them to be able to sell those wines, I suppose, to customers.
Have you felt the recession, or hopefully we're out of it now, but last year you're in your second year, weren't you?
Yeah, we continue to grow the whole way through, but we're a young business, so you'd maybe expect us to continue to grow. So we didn't find any particularly negative impact. We did see sales of very top-end wines taking a real dive. Sort of
what's
between
the price?
Over £100 a bottle.
Yeah.
Between, say, October, when was it? October 08 and maybe May last year. So that really stopped. Didn't just slow down, it just stopped. But since May, June last year, it's actually picked up and it's now right back to where it was before that. And that's only a very small part of our business, but it's noticeable, I suppose, which is the biggest difference. One thing which has been really interesting is that our average price per bottle sold hasn't moved by more than 2% any month since we've opened.
What's your average bottle price?
So it's £22.50.
Bottle price?
Yeah.
Wow.
The average bottle that we stock is about £14.
Yep.
But the average bottle that we sell is about £22.50.
That's a fantastic price.
Yeah, the reason for that is people, when they taste good quality wines, they trade up and they may buy fewer bottles, but they'll buy better quality. It's very difficult if you try a well-picked Pliny Montrachet and a well-picked Pliny Montrachet Premier Cru within £10 a bottle of each other bottle price. It's very hard to pick the village wine. Because generally you get more for your money. And that's really obvious when it's between, I suppose, £8 and £12. You get a massive difference, or £6 and £12. You get a massive difference moving from six to eight, actually, is the biggest jump, but then 8 to 12 is a big jump as well.
Yeah.
So it does decline a little bit as you go up. But, if we allow people to try, eight different Cabernets ranging from £6 to £100, they may think that they're going to buy a wine, come in thinking, looking to buy a wine at £12, or a couple of bottles of wine at £12, but they may end up buying one at £20, mm-hmm. just because they enjoy it. And that's completely up to them. We'll try and stock wines as well as we can for each price point, but then it's up to customers to decide what they want.
Okay. And what do you see going forward? You've obviously got plans to expand.
Yep.
And that's sort of been hampered by the legislation, by the sounds of it, although...
Yeah, not terribly. I mean, the real issue at the minute is which I'm sure is always the issue, is getting the right sites. So we're being quite picky with the sites that we're looking at. And even in this retail recession where you'd expect site acquisition to be much easier than you would usually, it's still the case that the best sites are still quite hard to get. And so we've agreed terms on one site, and we've got another one which we think we'll agree in the next week. But yeah, it's taken us longer than we expected.
Can you tell us the new site that you've agreed terms on?
Yeah, so the one that we've agreed terms on is in South Kensington, just very close to the tube station, but it's quite a big site as well. It's probably three times the size of this one in Islington.
Okay. All right. I think we'll wrap it up there. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you.
Cheers very much.